to this week's episode of the Cricket Her Weekly. We are actually recording this on a Friday to go out on Sunday. So if any huge cricketing event happens in the next 48 hours or so, then we'll just have to cover it next week, Sid. but there has been a few pieces of big news this week, and one of the biggest has been that cricket, men's and women's, is going to be in the Olympics.
Yeah, indeed. So, you know, well, okay. They still haven't 100% confirmed it's going to be in.
Okay.
But it's got to pretty much the last stage. So,
right, okay.
Yeah, the recommendation is that it be in. Some of the news reports actually were a bit odd, because there's a couple of other sports that are in a similar bucket to cricket. And basically the news reports went, cricket's definitely in, but these other sports, like squash, for example, may or may not be. And it's like, well, actually, technically, they're all in the same boat. So they've still got to be voted on.
Right.
But basically, the recommendation is that they're going to go ahead.
And
so cricket is going to be, is almost certainly going to be in. Now, it's not for quite a while, though, is it, Raph? It's not until LA 28. So it's Los Angeles in 2028, which
is... Yeah, so it's the next but...
5 years'
yeah,
time.
Yeah, so it's the next but one Olympics, because obviously everything has to be planned for ahead of time. I was just going to say that the process is not hugely transparent about exactly how they kind of go about admitting new sports, but anyway, it looks like cricket is going to be in, so I'm quite excited actually. But Sid, you did write a piece for the website this week about cricket being in the Olympics, which was a really good piece and very thought-provoking. So those of us who are kind of jumping up and down in our chairs with excitement about the thought of cricket being in the Olympics, you slightly tempered that excitement, didn't you?
Yeah, I've become a little bit sceptical. I think part of the reason I've become a little bit sceptical is because it's still like unclear why the ICC suddenly changed their minds like this. So for years the ICC very much ummed and erred about it, and we're like, oh, we're not sure about this. And then suddenly they've decided this is a good idea. It's possible that they see it as related to the introduction of this Major League Cricket, this big franchise tournament, which is at the moment only a men's tournament that they've got running, that they're trying to get up and running in the United States. Mm-hmm. We've had one edition of it. Obviously, they're hoping that there'll be more to come. So it's possibly related to that. Whatever, the ICC have been persuaded now.
I think it's widely known, isn't it, that the BCCI have been one of the kind of key thorns in the side of the ICC wanting cricket to be in the Olympics and supporting cricket being in the Olympics. So it's not necessarily the ICC who have changed their minds. It's perhaps the BCCI who obviously call a lot of the shots nowadays.
Yeah, so the ICC, they're, you know, their big thing is that this is going to kind of put cricket in a new light. They say it's going to be the biggest tournament that these players have ever played in.
The ultimate platform to shine, says Chris Barkley.
Yeah, now that seems of itself a little odd. Isn't your own World Cup the ultimate platform to shine?
No,
Sid,
it's the Olympics.
You know, and it's clear that most of the ICC's arguments kind of range around this, the idea that it will turn cricket into a bigger sport. It'll act as a marketing tool, a promotional tool for the game worldwide, and the game in the United States, where the ICC is pushing hard. And where women's cricket, to be fair, has got a big opportunity because of the way that baseball kind of treats women's baseball. Or softball is essentially women's baseball. I mean, the pedants will tell me that it's not, but basically softball is women's baseball.
Okay.
The way that that's treated in the United States does represent an opportunity for cricket. But I just think we need to be a little bit sceptical that this is going to be any kind of game changer. You know, again, as we saw at the Commonwealth Games, even at the Commonwealth Games, right, cricket was not the primary sport. Right, athletics is the primary sport at all of these events, and it's the athletics where all the focus is going to be. So, you know, in terms of the TV coverage that we like to see in this country, in England, for example, the BBC no longer has full coverage of the Olympics. They've kind of financial reasons have forced them to, you know, go into partnership with, I believe, the Discovery Channel. Don't quote me on that, but they've gone into partnership with a commercial channel, and that means that the BBC aren't going to show every event. And when it comes to deciding what they're going to show in their limited, you know, capacity to show things, they're obviously going to show the athletics first. They're going to show the gymnastics before that, because the gymnastics is the other huge sport from the Olympic perspective. So there's an awful lot of other sports in the queue ahead of cricket. Cricket is not going to be front and centre of these Olympic Games.
The media coverage is really interesting, because actually cricket usually is covered well, from our perspective, is usually covered by Test Match Special, a kind of specialist team of reporters who report on cricket, and that's their only job. And actually, the idea that the BBC will be able to afford to send the entire TMS team, or any of the TMS team, out to cover just the cricket in the Olympics doesn't seem very realistic.
Those things are going to cost a lot of money to do.
And from my perspective, will I be able to get any work covering women's cricket in the Olympics? It doesn't seem very likely, because it's just this one event in a much bigger event where a lot of the media focus is going to be on other sports.
Taking place in one of the most expensive cities in the world, where the rates for hotel rooms are going to be astronomical and things like that. So it's not going to get that same detailed specialist coverage that it would usually get. So there's a few reasons to be sceptical about it. But Raph, you know, we need to put some positives on there as well. What are the positives? Yeah.
I think it's a great opportunity for women's cricket in the US, isn't it? Cricket in the US, but obviously we're specifically focused on women's cricket, to capture that market. And just by virtue of being part of the Olympics, you will get people in the US tuning in and showing up who have never watched cricket before and will be exposed to it in a way that they wouldn't have been otherwise.
And
so I think there are positives.
You know, the sports channels will have, here's an introduction to cricket, here's how to follow cricket
exactly,
on the Olympics.
Exactly. A little bit like during the Commonwealth Games, there will have been people who went to see the lawn bowls who would never ever normally go and watch lawn bowls. And you know, therefore might have learned something about that particular sport. And so there is definitely an exposure element to it. But of course the big caveat to that is that it's only going to be a six-team competition, which is something else that you discussed in your piece, isn't it, Sid? And it's an interesting one, because all of the talk about the Olympics has been as it being this kind of big expansion opportunity for women's cricket and men's cricket as well, and that it's really exciting for kind of some of the lower-ranked nations. But they're not even going to get a looking, because it's just going to be purely the top six ranked nations. Now, I suspect what's happened there is that the ICC has had to massively compromise in terms of its conversations with the IOC, because the IOC has to think logistically, how are we going to fit in a cricket competition into an already heaving Olympic schedule? How are we going to fit in all of those 15-person cricket teams into our Olympic village and everything like that? So the compromise is, well, we have a six-team tournament. At the Commonwealth Games, we had an eight-team tournament, and there were teams who just missed out that were really disappointed. And that's going to be kind of mirrored in this situation, isn't it, Sid?
Yeah, definitely. And not, you know, as well as that, you know, it's already been made pretty clear that the, you know, the ICC and the people behind the scenes at the Olympics must have pretty much told that the Indian authorities and the Team GB authorities that, yes, England and India in particular will definitely be in, we will, whatever it takes. Now, technically, there's going to be a qualification process. What's that qualification process? Well, it's the ICC rankings. How are the ICC rankings calculated, Mr. ICC? Oh, I'm very sorry, we can't tell you that because of commercial confidence.
It's a special algorithm.
So, what clearly they're setting themselves up so that because obviously the people, there'll be a date, right? And they'll say, on this date, the rankings determine whether or not you qualify for the Olympic Games.
Yeah.
Clearly, the chief executive of the ICC and all those top people will be given a heads up several days before that date of which teams are going to qualify. And I can absolutely guarantee you that if India are not in that top six in both the men's and the women's events, the programmers will be told to go away and come up with a different answer to the secret ranking algorithm that puts India back in. So that means there is zero chance of even some of the better non-top six teams like Ireland, you know, breaking through into that kind of thing. It makes it difficult for teams like the West Indies as well, because you know, they won't necessarily be there. However hard you fight, in the back of your mind, it's going to be, yeah, but if we overtake India in the rankings, then the ICC are just going to cook the rankings. And that's just so disappointing from a competition perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we have to be careful what we say, obviously, because that's your theory, but we don't have any actual evidence about them cooking the algorithm, do we?
No.
Okay, good. You're talking about England as being one of the teams, but of course it's not going to be England, is it? It's going to be Team GB.
Yeah, and again,
this is effectively... very interesting, because that means that it should be the best Scottish women's cricketers, and potentially the best Northern Irish women's cricketers playing in that Team GB, right?
Yeah, in theory. I mean, someone was saying to me that apparently in the rugby, in terms of the rugby sevens, the Northern Irish players were told that they were going to play for the Republic of Ireland in the rugby sevens competition. So I kind of probably the same thing would happen with cricket, because obviously the Northern Irish players currently do play for Ireland in cricket.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, you know, are the Scottish players even going to be a looking? We saw, you know, on Twitter this week, everyone going, oh, we're so excited that Ben Stokes is going to be playing. I mean, well, whether Ben Stokes will still be playing for England at that point anyway, yeah. Who knows? I mean, he's kind of hobbling around the Men's World Cup at the moment. But, you know, it's like, it seems to be a foregone conclusion that it'll be the England captain, whoever they are, Ben Stokes, you know, Grace Scrivens, who will be leading out that team. And it shouldn't really be that foregone conclusion. It should be a British team that includes, you know, representatives from, you know, the whole of these
Absolutely.
Islands. Because otherwise it's not the Olympics. I mean, it's like, but the obviously the authorities want to have their cake and eat it, and they shall have cake and they shall eat cake.
Okay.
Anyway.
But I am really excited to see women's cricket in the Olympics. I'm just putting it out there for all of these caveats, for all of these things that we've talked about that are less positive aspects of it. How brilliant is it going to be when we sit down to watch the opening ceremony for LA 2028 and all of the women cricketers are there, and we get to see the coverage of women's cricket in the Olympics? I'm kind of excited.
Good. Awesome. Now, well, I was going to say close to home, in fact, equally
not,
far from home.
Not close to home at all.
All the way across in Mumbai. We mentioned a few weeks ago that, you know, John Lewis, the England coach, said he was going to have a special batting camp in Mumbai.
Yeah.
And that camp is going ahead as we speak. Our secret spies have been on the lookout for us and have reported back to us the England players that have flown off to the batting camp, because the England themselves have announced nothing about this. There's been no official press release or anything like that.
Nothing.
What have your secret spies told you, Raf?
Well, just want to say thank you very much to Jadeja, who has actually pointed this out to us on Twitter, flagged up that it's actually on Alice Capsey's social media. So I don't know about social spies, but you've got to be pretty savvy and be keeping up with everybody's social media, that Alice Capsey's photos have made it clear which players are at this batting camp in Mumbai. Now, obviously, some of them are going to be going off to WBBL, and some have indeed already gone, perhaps. Anyway, the England players who are at this batting camp are Alice Capsey, obviously, Freya Kemp, Danny Gibson, Bess Heath, Emma Lamb, and Sophia Dunkley. So when we talked about this, our concern was that John Lewis was going to be using this batting camp in a way to try to teach old dogs new tricks, if I can put it in that way. But actually, it does look like he's done what we really hoped that he would, which is pursue a much more kind of youth policy. So these are the players that he thinks that he needs to invest in very intensely over the next couple of years, because that's very important for their development. And obviously this boot camp is particularly thinking about how these batters are going to play spin and how they're going to do that in a better way.
Subcontinental pitches,
exactly.
As well. That's the crucial thing leading up to this the next two World Cups.
Yeah.
World Cup in
Bangladesh.
T20 World Cup in Bangladesh, and then a 50 over World Cup in India. So
exactly.
It's really important.
So he has gone for, this gives us quite an interesting insight into how he sees his England team shaping up over the next couple of years. So, I mean, obviously everyone knows Alice Capsey is going to be a big part of that. That's not really any great surprise, but to have Freya Kemp in there, to have Danny Gibson in there, to have Bess Heath in there, these are the players of the future that he's convinced are important with the bat. So we've talked a bit about what Danny Gibson's role might be. Well, this is a batting boot camp, so she might currently be, her role might currently be more of a bowling all-rounder for England, but he wants her to develop her batting. And the same with Freya Kemp, actually. That's really interesting. The Bess Heath, where we obviously saw her making her England debut right at the end of our summer, and against Sri Lanka, and just having that one kind of quite quick fire hit out. So he obviously wants her to develop. That's really exciting, because it gives an indication that far from that being just a kind of throwaway cap and, oh, let's see how she goes, he actually genuinely is looking at her as being one of England's real exciting future batting prospects. The Emma Lamb one is a bit more interesting. Because obviously she's still relatively young, and you know, so it follows with that kind of more youthful policy. But I feel like for her, you know, the jury was out a little bit this summer in terms of where she sat in the pecking order.
Yeah, she hasn't really established her place in the England team, has she? But I mean, she's not an old player, don't you? But she's the oldest of that group.
So
yeah,
she's got an international 100 under her belt. She's obviously a very good player. But my sense was just that a little bit, the jury was out a little bit, and she might have been
being overtaken by those younger players.
She's been fighting it out a little bit with Maya Boucher for that opening spot, hasn't she? So that's interesting. It gives an indication of where John Lewis's head is at. He obviously thinks Emma Lamb is still very much worth focusing on and developing. And of course, Sophia Dunkley, well, she's had a bit of a difficult summer in some ways. And this is perhaps partly about, you know, we didn't think that she was going to disappear. She certainly wasn't on the chopping block. But this is about her re-establishing her confidence. And so perhaps for her, it's partly about going, okay, I'm the coach and I think you're worth it. And I think you're worth my investing this time in you. And also just a little bit of kind of time and space away from the intensity of possibly kind of Loughborough or other environments that she might otherwise have found herself in, just to have that little bit of time to re-establish her confidence and get her game back to where it was a couple of years ago, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think it's a positive set of selections, and you know, credit to John Lewis for trying something different. You know, you take the players out of their normal environment and put them in a different environment. We talked previously about the advantages of going to Mumbai, that you can get plenty of keen young net bowlers that are going to give you lots of spin on some dusty nets in Mumbai, and that's going to be, you know, incredible for these players' development. So you know, big up to John Lewis for kind of, you know, making this happen and for persuading the powers that be, because this, you know, won't have been cheap. That's why the powers that be to, you know, find the budget for this.
Yeah, I must admit, as I look out of the window at our dreary, rain-filled Friday, I am, you know, slightly envious of them out there in 32-degree heat.
I'd be complaining it was too hot.
Yeah, especially if you were having to be out there batting all day. Anyway, finally this week, Sid, something a little bit more serious, because we actually had a comment on last week's episode from the Clanger. Our old friend the Clanger. Hello, the Clanger. I believe that's a pseudonym. We don't believe that's...
He's not actually a Clanger. He doesn't actually
real
live on the moon.
Identity. Anyway, I'll read out what he says. England are due to play Afghanistan in an ODI World Cup match on 15th of October. Should they, given they refuse to play South Africa over apartheid? Or is this a case of colour matters, but gender does not? Australia versus Afghanistan on 7th of November is even more interesting. Australia refused to play Afghanistan in an ODI series due in March this year, and Nick Hockley, the chief of Cricket Australia, stated basic human rights is not politics. I'm guessing therefore Australia will refuse to play Afghanistan. Is the reality that in cricket money comes first, then basic human rights? And if the above is true, what does that say about the moral standing of cricket? On the one hand, spouting off about the spirit of cricket as if it has virtue, whilst on the other, pouring money into and propping up gender discrimination. Couldn't have put it better myself, the Clanger.
Yeah, at the end of the day, it's very disappointing, because basically you can see what's happened. The ICC are breathing a big sigh of relief and going, we got away with that one. But, you know, nobody's making a fuss.
No.
I will be amazed if these matches against the Afghanistan men's side don't go ahead. You know,
it would have been flagged up already by those cricket
boards.
If either Cricket Australia or the ECB were planning some kind of boycott, it would have been flagged up weeks ago.
So it's incredibly disappointing that you know, everybody has abandoned the Afghanistan women. And, you know, I wish it was different, and I wish that we could do more. But I feel disappointed, and I sort of feel a certain sense of responsibility, because, you know, we tried to make a fuss, and, you know, we went for an enormous splash in a very small puddle, and that was all we kind of achieved. And it's like, is there something more that we could have done? But I'm not sure there is, because, you know, we're fighting against an organisation that's driven by the whims of Indian politics and the BCCI, and, you know...
And driven by an obsession with men's cricket.
Money is king.
Well, money, but but men's cricket ultimately. Yeah. And I think that the Clangers point about, and you know, we've talked about it previously about, you know, it's not okay to play apartheid South Africa because of like race discrimination, but it is okay to play Afghanistan when there's kind of, you know, national horrific treatment of women, horrific sex discrimination going on, and that's somehow okay. So yeah, you really are sending out that signal that you're just accepting it, and yeah, it's very disappointing, and particularly that obviously money talks, but the ECB and Cricket Australia have got money to splash around. They've, you know, they are two of the richest cricket boards in the world after the BCCI. They have the clout in world cricket to make a fuss about this.
They could have taken a stand and they chose not to. And it's very disappointing. Sorry.
Yeah, that's a bit of a downer. There's not much else to say, really.
Okay.
Well, thank you,
everybody.
Thank you for tuning in, everybody, and we will see you, as ever, in a week's time. Bye for now.
Bye.